Okay, Michelle, or Kirk, here we go.
Hello, and welcome to the Beacon Group's noon step meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Kirk, and I'm an alcoholic. In an effort to lessen distractions to others and to respect our speakers, you will not be able to unmute yourself during the meeting. Let's start this meeting with a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. AA Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober, help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. This is an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and all are welcome to attend. But we ask that only alcoholics participate. If you're new to AA or new to Beacon Group, we strongly recommend home group membership and sponsorship. If you're new or not so new and looking for a sponsor, please put your name and number in the chat. If you have worked all 12 steps as outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, have had a spiritual experience, and are willing to sponsor, please also put your name and number in the chat. The chat will remain open during the meeting, except while the speaker is sharing. Also in the chat, you will find our AA quote of the day. Quote source will always be from AA literature. Our speaker will share for 30 minutes on the step of the day, which I will time. Then we split into breakout rooms for small group discussions. Each group has a moderator who will divide the time equally and invite each person to share. Questions are encouraged during the sharing part of the meeting. When you share, please be sure your environment is quiet, free of distractions. Breakout room discussions end at 12:54, followed by day counts, announcements, and the Lordy's Prayer. I have asked Frank to read the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I think it's Frank. Hopefully it's Frank. Frank, you're up.
Twelve steps to alcoholics. We admitted one. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. 12, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks, Frank. Speaking of 12, today we'll hear a talk on step 12. Please give a warm welcome to Michelle P. from Drum, Pennsylvania.
Am I muted now? Okay, I'm unmuted now. I was waiting and then I was hitting buttons and probably screwing everything up as usual. Anyway, hi, my name is Michelle. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is February 27th, 1975. I belong to the Heart and Soul group in Plains, Pennsylvania. Means nothing to any of you because this is, I live in a very small rural area in Luzerne County, Pennsylvania, northeastern part of the United States in Pennsylvania. And it's funny because when John asked me to do this on the 12th step, I was like, wow, this is like my almost awesome favorite step. But I just want to kind of lead up to this before I get into my interpretation. And remember, this is my interpretation only of this step. A little bit about, you know, how this lady got here at the age of 25. So I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, not wanting to get sober and not having a God. And the reason I got here is because the year before my father developed a wet brain. And I never even knew alcohol destroyed brain cells. So that alone was probably the beginning of the catalyst to get me to look at my own drinking. And it took another year, but there I was in this AA meeting, 25, guys telling World War II stories, wanted to blow my brains out, hated every minute of it. And I stayed. And they kept saying, I kept saying, what do I do next? They say, go to another meeting. I forgot to start my timer. That's usually what I do. Anyway, go to another meeting. So I'm going to tell you, honestly, back when I got sober, it was fellowship recovery. We didn't talk about steps traditions. We didn't talk about big books. We had sponsors. We had home groups. We did service as far as making coffee, cleaning up, setting up, that kind of thing. So my journey, so I can't talk about 12, step 12 without kind of giving you a little overview of for how I look at the first 11, and I'm not going to talk about them in detail. The first I had, after that initial shock of being in these meetings and keep going to these meetings and keep staying, I don't know, only now I know by the grace of my higher power did I stay. And things did change. The fellowship recovery became true recovery. So when I, you know, all I had to do in the first step was admit my powerlessness and my life was unmanageable. And I could, you know, once I did that and taken that step 100% without reservations, then they told me the rest were perfect ideals and goals to work toward. So can I say I honestly took that first step when I walked in, you know, when I came to A? Probably, I don't know, because I'm still stayed. But I didn't have the full belief in, you know, the unmanageability because it was everybody else's fault. And then the second step asked me to come to believe that a power greater than me is going to restore me to right thinking. They say sanity. And this is where I could have really got hung up on the God thing, you know, and I was told not to get hung up on the God thing. So, because I told you, I didn't want to get sober and I had no God. So I came, you know, I thought, okay, what power was greater than me? And the old timers would say, make the doorknob or coffee cup your higher power. I thought that was the dumbest thing I ever heard. But I looked around the rooms and it was pretty small in my area back then. And those people were staying sober. I think the longest term sobriety at the time was 7 years. So I made the group of drunks my higher power for a while. Then I have to make a decision to turn my will and life over. So now I have this key of willingness. And this is where willingness became really important to me. The willingness to open the door and self-will will slam it shut. And I kept slamming it shut, but I realized every time I slammed it shut, I still had the key. So all I need was that willingness to keep trying. I did the house cleaning steps for 4 through 9. 6 and 7 were my getting rid of character defects and shortcomings. I've learned that I will never get rid of all my defects, but the ones that needed to go were the ones that were blocking me from the sunlight of the spirit. All the ego-driven stuff, the self-pity, self-righteousness. You know, it's just, you know, my very judgmental person I was, that had to go. Now, if I bite my nails, then that's a character defect. I don't think that'll ever go away. I don't bite my nails, but I'm just using that as an example. So then I get to step 10, and now I've got to take continue to take personal inventory. And I do this all day long. This is not a just put my head on the pillow kind of step for me. These are my growing, the last three are the growing steps for me. They used to say they were maintenance steps. If I maintained where I was when I got to these steps, I would not be here today. But I had to keep growing, and I wanted to keep growing. My higher power put that in me to have that desire and that willingness to keep growing. So I walk around, and in my day, if I hurt somebody, I harm somebody, I make direct amends wherever possible. I don't lay my head down on the pillow at night filled with resentment and anger. I can't live with resentment and anger anymore. So then I get to my 11th step, and that's where I do my prayer meditation to the best of my ability. I am not a person that is great at meditating. I'm a person who tries every day and does the best I can. And I also know that God honors my attempts. I don't get hung up on beating myself up for not doing any of this perfect, because I've done nothing perfect. If that would be the case again, I wouldn't be here. I already came in here with low self-esteem. I didn't need to be beat up anymore. You know, somebody used to say, you know, there was a saying, I don't know if I'd still say it, but you know, beating myself up, and somebody would say, well, get off the cross. They need the wood, you know, because it was always that, you know, I was like the worst person on the face of this earth, and I am not the worst person on the face of this earth. I'm just a perfect human being because I make mistakes. And I know God honors all of it, all my attempts, all my fail, everything I've done, what quote unquote wrong by some people, God honors me. Now I get to the step that I came here to talk about. So having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I couldn't say that sentence without at least giving you that little bit of background. You know the story of the turtle and the hare? And the turtle's walking, and the hare's like, oh, I'm going to beat this guy. And he goes off to the side. Well, I'm not going to talk about the hare so much, but I was the turtle. And I was the turtle that looking for the spiritual awakening in this way. So the turtle was moseying in the story, was moseying along at a turtle's pace. But this turtle would stop and get distracted and look at a rock and go over and investigate the rock. Sometimes the turtle would walk along and see a blade of grass and stop. What's that? And go over and look at that was me. And the hare over there sleeping in the grass saying that turtle's never going to beat me. But that's the way my journey to spiritual awakening was. Distractions, the road less traveled, here, branches off. Oh, the turtle sees a flower. What's that? Stops, looks at the flower. So that's the way my spiritual journey happened. You know, in the promises, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, really slowly for me. And again, very grateful for that. So having had a spiritual result, I like a course of tried to read William James' varieties of religious experiences, and I thought, this is like way over my head. It's saying my internet's unstable, so if I blank out or something, let me know. So, you know, because I was going to now see, you got to understand this thing about Michelle is that I was going to do this Susie Sunshine Miss AA. I was going to do everything perfectly. That was my whole goal when I decided I was going to stay. You know, I was 25, brunette, but I bounced into the room. Hey, how you doing? I was always like happy-go-lucky and how are you? I'm fine. And inside I was dying. So my spiritual awakening was very, very slow. Group of drunks, probably 10 to 13 years. I don't remember when it started to change, but it did change. And I was willing to have people guide me to another meeting, which was called God as I Understand the Meeting. And it was every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. And I was like, whoa, 10 a.m. I could go drive 8 miles to at 10 a.m. But I did. And that man that his name was John also, and he became my spiritual advisor. And he took me on, him and a couple other people. We went on a spiritual journey that lasted like 20 years. And I can't believe my timer says that I've only spoken for a minute. Is something very wrong here? Could somebody tell me how long I've spoken, Kirk?
About 13 minutes.
Thank you. Man, I took 13 minutes to turn this on. So anyway, the turtle's going along and learning and seeking and being open and being willing and being as honest as she can be. And eventually, you know, it's funny how people were put into my path. I had nothing to do with any of that. People were put into my path. And took, like I said, that John took me on the spiritual journey, lasted about 20 years. Now, he had passed during that time, but that journey continued for about 20 years. And then I kind of lulled out, you know, you flatten out, you kind of stabilize, you kind of whatever you want to call it, you kind of get complacent is what I call it. So now we're taking me into the 30 some years of sobriety, right? And then I'm like, okay. I have to tell you this, I didn't even sponsor anybody for 10 years. Those people were pretty smart to know not to ask me to sponsor them. So anyway, I had this spiritual awakening, and what did it look like? It did not look like God and heaven was speaking to me, or there was a burning bush or a white light or anything like that. My idea of God is changes over and over and over again. I have Buddhas all over my house. I love to read about Buddhism. I love Hinduism. I love Catholicism. I love Judaism. I love, you know, all of it. I like to combine it all. And then I found this higher power that isn't up in the heavens, isn't here, and in every one of you. And I see the God in all people now. And I love the God in all people. I don't may not like the person, but I love the God in them. That's how I got to a spiritual awakening. And then it says, we try to carry this message to alcoholics. Now, it says tried. It doesn't say we're going to be able to help every single alcoholic on the face of the planet. So my first attempts at trying to help, again, in quotes, were to chase people in the bathroom when I knew they had a bottle in their purse and start screaming at them, or actually yelling at people in hallways as they were going out to the bar. That's the way I did that first 10 years, because I was insane and I thought I had some kind of control over people. It says we will try to carry this message. We can carry the message. We can carry that, but that doesn't necessarily mean that person's going to get sober right away. And also, all I see that as is I planted a seed. And, you know, every person I've sponsored, I always say this, they got sober in spite of me. I'm not responsible for the recovery, nor am I responsible for anybody's relapse. So that's what carrying the message. Listen, Michelle wanted to put billboards up when I first came. Everybody should know about this. This is awesome. Why don't we have billboard? Now, I'm back in the 70s. We didn't have, you know, social media and all that other stuff. And somebody's like grabbing me saying, what? No, it's attraction rather than promotion. And I'm like, yeah, but you really need attraction. You need promotion. And they're going, no, it doesn't work that way, girl. You know, I'm like, well, it should. Yeah, I was a little bit crazy. I still am, but that's okay. So now I'm going to try to carry this message to the alcoholics. And I try by the grace of God, women started asking me to sponsor them. And I'll tell you about the first in the 80s, maybe into the 90s, the first bunch of women I sponsored. What a hot mess I was. And they stayed sober in spite of me. But my ego was so big, and I didn't know until one day on this very Wednesday get together we used to have, the women that had small children and didn't work at the time. And they'd come to my house and we'd have lunch and we'd sit around and we'd have a little meeting. And I went in the kitchen, which was right next to the dining room. And I guess there was seven, maybe six or seven women. I don't remember, but I hear them talking about me. Oh, Michelle, this, oh, Michelle, that. Like I was like going up, up, up. And my head was going poof, poof, poof. My ego's going boom, boom, boom. And I'm like, holy God, that was the first time I realized how big my ego was. So I went in there and I asked them, please do me a favor, ladies, knock me off the pedestal. And they all looked at me like in shock. And I know what it felt like to get knocked off the pedestal. And let's just do it all at once because it hurts. You know, because your ego is still in charge. And that flipped everything after that for me. So now I've got these beautiful people in my life that I sponsor. And now I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs. Do I do it perfectly? Absolutely not. But again, I say God honors my attempts. Am I the most perfect specimen of a recovering alcoholic in the world? Absolutely not. I don't care if I have 48 years. Does not mean a thing. What means a thing to me is today. I get in out of my bed. Before I get out of my bed, I say, God, get in my head before I do. Because my mind is a bad place to be by myself. And then I start my day. I do my 11th step the way I do my 11th step. And I go about and take care of what I need to take care of. Now, how have I practiced in other ways? Because, you know, life happens. Life happens. And I didn't realize that during this time my husband and I had three sons. My husband and I met in 1968. We got married in 1972, June 17th, 1972. My husband and I got married. And I've lost a lot of people. I've lost a lot of my sponsors from natural causes. I've lost my sister, my parents, and a lot of friends. And, you know, each time I grieved a certain way, and each time I got through it with the help of practicing these principles in all my affairs. I'm powerless over life. I have no control over what happens in life. December 1st, my husband went to the dentist, and I was up on the computer again, planning a big trip to Scotland, because we wanted to go back to Scotland. And he came home from the dentist, and he said, let's go down to this restaurant in the next town. And I said, okay. So he said, let the numbness wear off. We went down to the restaurant. We had a beautiful dinner. He had his favorite meal, linguine with red clam sauce. Talked about going back to Scotland. We talked about getting a dog. We're driving home. Now, this is the whole trip would be 10, 15 minutes to get from the restaurant to back to our house. And about 4 minutes into the ride, he made a funny, like a grunting noise. And I said, what's the matter? He said, my stomach's bothering me. And I said, well, you didn't take your stomach pills. He said, I never had a pain like this before. And a minute and a half later, he said, I'm dying. And he pulled off the side of the road and put the car in park and died. And 50 years of marriage, 54 years. I'm 73 years old. I've never lived by myself. John's been my whole life. And the police, you know, the ambulance came, they resuscitated him, but he was already brain dead. So I had to watch him die the next day. And I often wonder today, 5 months later, why am I not a blubbering fool? Why am I not grieving in the way that I grieved my sister in 1998? Why am I accepting that John died? I'm not saying I'm not grieving, but I'm not blubbering and crying, and I'm doing everything I need to do every day. That's all I do. I'm not happy he died. I'm very, very sad. I miss him terribly, but what am I going to do? You know, and a drink never even entered the equation because there's no way that I would a drink bring him back? No. But the one thing, I don't even know how long I have, but the one thing I want to say about my husband was he was not an alcoholic. We were married 2.5 years when I got sober. And my husband was a huge supporter of Alcoholics Anonymous, went to all the open speaker meetings. And so therefore, even when Zoom came up, he was still extremely supportive. And so he was a good friend of Bill W., even though he was a non-alcoholic. But he had an alcoholic father and brother. So, but this is how, like, this is practicing these principles in all my affairs means to me, is that I don't know what's around the corner. I don't know what God has in store for me. I am clueless about that. All I know is I need to keep in a fit spiritual condition. And the best way I can stay in fit spiritual condition is by working with others. 5 minute warning, thank you. Fit spiritual condition. That's how, you know, that's how I'm getting through these each day. So there's no trip to Scotland this year, next year, I'm going to England this year, but got the dog. Dog's 4 months old, crazy person that I am, because, you know, why not get a puppy? And I don't know how much more to this step means to me is I've had a spiritual awakening as a result of working the steps. It's so simple. We alcoholics could complicate a one car funeral. I swear to God, I have heard such crazy things that it's like my head spins half the time. It was very simple. When I got sober, maybe too simple in the beginning. It was just do what's outlined in the big book. I've had people tell people I sponsor would ask them what step they're on, which is none of their business as far as I'm concerned, but they would tell them what their step they were on. And next thing you know, they'd say, well, how are you staying sober only on that step? Everybody's program is the way everybody's program is. You know, and getting to this 12 step is the goal. And it's, I think that I don't know if I said it, but I know it says the first line, and I had the book open because my memory's not. The joy of living is the theme of AA. I'm sorry. The joy of living is the theme of AA's 12 step. The joy of living is the theme of AA's 12. So if you don't think you're doing it perfect, don't worry about it. God's honoring you. If anything I've done right, I've stayed. That's it. And the other thing was having that little bit of willingness. And that little bit of willingness kept growing. And that's why I'm 48 years still here. That's why I'm still here sharing with you guys. And I love the God in all of you. My God's not in heaven. My God is in here. My heart's here. My husband's here. Everybody I love is here, live or dead. They're all here. And I wish you much blessings in this world and in this day. And I want to thank John for spelling my name right. And I want to thank him for asking me to come and share with you lovely people on this wonderful meeting. Thank you very much.